Succession number 10420, Rule 57.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 57. You're with the 55th Division, Colonel.
Yes, I was with the 5th Division, and I travelled all over the Palestine, Lebanon and Syria, choosing ground for the various exercises. As I say, it was an extremely happy time. When, one occasion, though, we went up to the foothills of the Lebanese mountains, and Francis Moore and I, who's my G2, shared a tent. We all shared a tent, and we had a small tent with only a chair in between us. And I, for safety's sake, put all my clothes under my mattress on my camp bed, and I hung my trousers, battle dress trousers, up in the roof of the tent. And I put my gum boots at the end of my bed. Francis Moore put all his clothes on the chair. And when I woke up in the morning, I thought something was odd. So I said to Francis Bourne, "Where'd you put your clothes last night?" "Oh, they're on the chair." They'd all gone. And somebody had been in the tent and taken all Francis Bourne's clothes, his field glasses, his compass and equipment, and they'd pinched also my gumboots at the end of the bed. And we had to send back some 40 miles to get some more clothes for Francis Bourne before he could get out of bed. But that was just an incident. Well, on another occasion, I remember, we went to Damascus to pick out some land for an exercise on the Damascus Road, near the Golan Heights and not far from Kenitra, where St. Paul and Francis Bourne could speak Arabic to a certain degree. And I couldn't. An old man came, an Arab Bedouin came wandering along the road, and he had a big white beard, and I think Francis Moore said to him, "Father of all, Alhamdulillah, Masalama," by way of introduction, and then said, "Oh, father of all beards." But behind him, he had either a daughter or a very young wife, quite one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. She was in black, you know, like all these Bedouins were, but she hadn't her face covered. And of course, some of those Bedouins in that part of the world are not nearly so hidebound about covering their faces, but she was really beautiful, quite one of the most beautiful women I've seen, and not at all shy, because she particularly wanted a 7-pound tin as a pan. She particularly wanted this empty 7-pound tin. Anyhow, she got it, and she got some cigarettes, and also some other tins as well. She was called Ali. She told us her name, and she, when she picked anything up, she had a beautiful arm covered in bangles. I always remember that, Ali, on the road to Damascus. Well, we did exercises down to by the Allenby Bridge in Palestine, and in bottom of the lower end of Palestine, near the Dead Sea. We went and had meals at that newly built hotel down on the Dead Sea, where the Jews used to go and spend all their holidays, and there was a golf course down there, not with grass, but sand, because it was particularly hot down there. And I know that we shouldn't have been spending nights down there, but we did spend a night down by the Allenby Bridge. And I also bathed, and I took the opportunity of bathing in the Jordan there, where St. John carried out his work, and I had a bathe and jumped into the Jordan there. But you couldn't bathe in the Dead Sea. It was too salty. And and dangerous. Your head went in and your feet went up. Now I was told that Francis wasn't to stay with me, Francis Morn, and Max, this fellow Maxwell, returned. I did spend that Christmas Eve in Bethlehem with the general and his splendid ADC, and Charlie Danks was his ADC, and it really was an inspiring Christmas Eve. Of course, we listened to, Bethlehem was absolutely packed with pilgrims, and we listened to the soldiers, a certain number of soldiers, singing while shepherds watched their flocks by night, down in the actual fields of the shepherds. They were only rough pasture, hillside, very rough, rocky hillside, but they were still called, when we were there, the fields of the shepherds. And they had a big fire, and it was quite still, and you could hear them singing away, way down below you in Bethlehem, because Bethlehem's rather on the hilltop. And there are enormous crowds. And we went to a service in the old Crusader church with its roof now off, there's no, and really singing there too. You just looked up at the stars. There were crowds there, but there was a little band playing, and you just looked up to the stars. It was quite cold, chilly, in fact, because you get snow up in Jerusalem in the weather, winter weather. And then we went back to Jerusalem and spent the night at Jerusalem after that. I 1945 came along. We did a very good exercise down to towards the end of the year, down to Allenby Bridge, and you pass as you go down from Jerusalem down to Jericho and the Allenby Bridge over the Jordan. You pass the inn of the Good Samaritan, and it's still a khan, an inn to this day. You pass it, and I remember it poured with rain when we stopped there. Well, anyhow, Francis Morn wasn't allowed to stay with me, and now it came to 1945. And I somehow had to get rid of Maxwell, who came back to me. I felt always sorry for Maxwell. His home had been burnt down in Ireland during the Irish Troubles, but he was really no good. And I got a fellow called Rex Martian to come. And he was another old Carthusian, and he came from the 5th Division itself. And another incident, the fun I had with the... We went out for a ride, the general and myself, and Charlie Danks, he at his best, Robin Price, Rose Price, and I forget now who else. He said it would cost him 7-6 on Wimbledon Common if... he had a ride like this. And then the general, some of them told me that I rode like the Duke of Wellington. And but that was the sort of atmosphere when I was with the 5th Division. But all the time there was an unpleasant atmosphere in the country. I remember Chartres, now Lord Chartres, who gave us a lecture on the state of affairs in Palestine. He took as his text, you might say, "Behold, shall neither slumber nor sleep," and that's in Psalm 122. And he had it also written above his desk, because I went to the King David where he worked, and there it was. And "Behold, he who keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep," which was perfectly true. I'd tell you another exercise that we did. I did for them, organized, was the general and the staff, his senior staff. And That was merely for a day's shooting on Lake Hula. We had to take certain precautions. And so I organized an exercise to shoot on duck on Lake Hula in Upper Palestine. Well, they were determined, the general was determined to let me go with the team to Italy. And so were his staff. They knew that if once I got into Italy, I'd never get out again. They wouldn't let me go. And GHQ agreed to, they said I could. They expected me to go, and the brigadier training said, well, you've gone, we accept that you'll never come back again. And then all the time I was trying hard to get out of there. And I saw the 5th Division, who now got to move to Italy, leave the ship at Haifa. And I actually got onto the board of the ship and saw my cabin with my name on the cabin, and then I was told I had to go. Well, it nearly, the farewell just faded away, and my team was put under headquarters, Palestine District, Palestine, not GHQ. And the 5th Division having gone, the 1st Division came to take its place. And General Lern commanded the division. He was a Canadian. And funnily enough, after the war was over, when I reformed the battalion, he was our general here in peacetime. But the 1st Division were frightfully uncooperative. I found it very difficult to get on with the general. Before, I'd lived in the GHQ divisional headquarter mess, and then I was pushed round from brigade to brigade. The division wasn't nearly so of what we did. Now, if I set an exercise, you could rest assured it would be changed. And for instance, I set an exercise to cross the River Litani for each battalion. Well, they were all changed round. However, I had to direct it when the time came and umpire it. And whilst I was doing all this, in the middle of March 1955, Rex Marshall was taken away from me to become a brigade major. And I got a chap called Brian Dillon posted to him, and he posted to me. And he had never seen since 1940. He'd been in the SAS, broken his pelvis, jumping out of a Land Rover, and of course he knew precious little. But I was warned that I had to teach him. At that time, you were allowed to take girls with you because the war was getting to an end, who were in official positions. For instance, I had a girlfriend out there, and I still know her. Still, she comes and stays even to this day. And she would go with me to Damascus, and Brown Dillon's wife would go with him. I'm not going into all the details of his experiences because he was dropped behind the Germans in Greece, and he married the girl in Cairo who used to send him his mail to him. Anyhow, we all one day went to Damascus, and we had them. This was in the 25th of March in 55, and we had a tremendous drive back from Damascus over the Golan Heights to Jerusalem, and we had to keep the snow off our windscreen the whole way across the Golan Heights down into Jerusalem. It was never stopped blowing a blizzard going over those heights, high ground. As I say, I did prepare these exercises, gave them lectures, and umpired their exercises. I saw 11 crossings of the River Litani till I was nearly driven sick of seeing the sight of the battalion, one battalion after another, making a crossing across the river. Left them for a Middle East rifle meeting. This was for every unit in the Middle East, and there were three main ranges. One was at Helwan, one was at Abbasia, and one was at Mahdi. And I was the sort of chief controller at Mahdi, just to show how uncooperative the 1st Division were. They were asked to send a battalion to do it, and they refused to do the work on these ranges. And my range was the one where the VIPs came. Certainly the British ambassador came, and my only job was to really, if there had been any trouble, I was to make the decision. I hadn't anything to do with the actual firing. There were all the range wardens and scorers and all that sort of thing, and I had a very good company of South Africans, some battalion of South Africans, and they did all the hard work. But I had to talk to the British ambassador, Lord Killearn, for 3/4 hour. I think the King of Egypt was there. Certainly I had the commander-in-chief, and because I remember driving round with him and in his car, and he produced his little revolver from underneath his car seat and talking about how a revolver should be balanced, easy to handle, and how you should use it. Some of the very senior officers actually fired their revolver in this vast rifle meeting in these three ranges. I had a Nuba battalion of the Sudan Defense Force firing on mine ranges. I had the 1st Duke of Cornwall's light infantry firing. I had the Arab Legion firing. I had the Greeks firing. And I had the Transjordan Frontier Force all firing. And as I say, I had the South African company. They fired too, I think, or some of the South Africans fired. And they were extremely helpful in organizing it. And I think the King of Egypt was there, I'm not sure. But we had lunch in the CNC's tent, I remember, which was run by NAFI. It was easily the best meal I'd had during the whole of the war. And then I returned back again to the 1st Division at the end of April, 21st of April, and they're hard at work doing the river crossings, which all my exercises had been scrapped and some new ones had been done. And I had to, in May, umpire the new ones. And we did it with the aid of artificial moonlight, which was merely searchlights brought up behind your headquarters, and the beam widened to such an extent that the whole area just seemed as if you were in moonlight. Millions and millions of moths flew around these searchlights, and there were great heaps of dead moths all around them, and with behind them jackals waiting to eat them up. Then we had VE Day, and I took, on May the 9th, which was the day after VE Day, I took the brigadier and myself, brigade commander of that particular brigade, and the GOC, General Lern, to dine in the Academy restaurant in in Beirut. It was a Greek restaurant, and they gave us very, very good meal. I know we had strawberries and cream. Then we went to an open-air cafe, and where a chap at the next table summoned the waiter with a shot from his revolver. And I think I heard almost more firing in Beirut that night than I'd heard during the whole of the war. Now, I remember one day there, one Sunday, I was up in the hills somewhere in Lebanon. I just can't remember quite when it was. It was about now, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and I was sitting high up in the hills, and below me, in a little valley running up into the Lebanon mountains, were two pipers, and they were playing the pipes from the Royal Scots, and I sat and listened to those pipes as they marched slowly up, the two of them, playing Mist-Covered Mountains or something like that. I do remember that. But about now, a very serious situation had arisen with the Free French in Syria. And they had reinforced their unit from a cruiser. And fighting did break out. And we had places like Damascus and Aleppo all put out of bounds. Not Beirut, but I think most of the other places were put out of bounds. But I know I wanted to go to Aleppo on one occasion, and they told me no. The locals told me no, there was fighting was going on between the Syrians and the Free French. And eventually we bundled the whole of the French forces out of the country. But it was a very serious situation. Then another big exercise was done for the 1st Division called Cromwell. And in that one I did in fact act as a brigadier. And it was at a place called Katana. And the CNC came himself to see it, and everything really went extremely well. He always had a friendly word with me, and he had a friendly word, and he said the training teams had come to stay, but in future they would be sent out from England, having been trained properly in England. So he didn't think much of our effort. Anyhow...
Who was CNC?
Paget.
Still Paget.
Yes, still Paget. And, of course, they'd come to stay. We're talking now about 45, 47. We were out of the country. And everything went very well with this exercise, Cromwell. Then we started to do house-to-house training, and I got a chap called McIntyre, a sapper, to come and help me, who was on the Palestine headquarters. That went well. However, now we are in July 45, and I fed up with the behavior of some of the brigades in the number one division, and I went with Brian Dillon, who was leaving me and was coming to England and eventually Camberley, and I left, got into my Land Rover, and I woke my team up, and we drove off at 2 a.m. in the morning, and on the way between Samania, Tel Aviv, driving through an orange grove, we found on the middle of the road a Jewish policeman, what they call a settlement policeman. He was a policeman in a Jewish settlement. And not realizing what sort of situation really was in Palestine, or not thinking about it, I was going to stop, but Brian Dillon said to me, for God's sake, don't stop, so drive on as fast as you can. It may be a plant. So that gives you an example of what the situation was coming to in Palestine. So we drove, I drove on as fast as I could past the policeman lying in the middle of the road, and then we turned back. I think he'd only been hit on the head by an Arab or something like that, or was drunk. Anyhow, we put him on his feet and kicked him off down the road. When I got to GHQ to say goodbye to Brian Dillon and his wife, I had a little party, a little drink party, myself and my girlfriend, Brian Dillon and his wife, and this chap McIntyre, who'd helped me in the house-to-house fighting training, who had been Brian Dillon's sapper officer in Greece. Really that was the end, because on the 15th of July, GHQ told me there was no need to return, as I had to report to 152 Transit Camp and for my journey home on Python 13. And in August, I remember the exact date, I set sail from Alexandra. The last view of the white sand and the fig trees away up the western desert, I could see faintly getting farther and farther away. And I thought I'd never return to the North Africa again. But I did, three times to Maras at the army's expense. Then I travelled from Toulon to Dieppe, right across France by train. It was some New Zealand line that I went with from Alex to Toulon. And then I went to York for a civilian outfit. And I think I went to Stockton to finally end my career. But I had leave and for disembarkation leave, demobilization leave.